Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
We're back for a Not a Thing podcast, despite a weird power outage over here.
I think it's the work of the NSA. Trying to shut you down. Don't let the man shut you down.
Oh, no. No, we had our candle lantern up and lit. I had my flashlight, you know, at the ready. I actually already had my, what is it? I have a secondary battery just to charge, like, iPhones and iPads, and that was fully charged. So, I mean, I guess we could have recorded, now that I think about it. If I'd tried it, it would just be over cellular, which would mean it would probably sound like ass.
Right. Well, I'm impressed that even with the power out, you were still able to post pictures of you with your lamp.
Well, I guess that means whatever cell is in the area was not out. So power seemed to be out in like two blocks in both directions. But at the ends of the street, I could see street lights for the next street over. So it must have been I was catching cell service from wherever that tower is.
Well, if it's that localized, I think that lends credence to my NSA theory. There's the man trying to shut us down.
It's a very targeted effort.
I've seen Enemy of the State. I know what's up.
Well, I mean, you know, if they don't catch me at home, it looks like they'll catch me on the in Azeroth in World of Warcraft, or in Xbox Live Land, whatever you call those magical lands. Some news came out this week. You made a really good point. It's our like weekly NSA update. This week it came out that the NSA is apparently spying on World of Warcraft and Xbox Live.
It's our weekly paranoia report.
I mean, I guess that's the whole point of that is that if there's a place where two potential terrorists can talk to each other without, you know, the NSA looking at it, they want to start looking at it. And I mean, it's possible that you would hear something in like Baron's chat or something, but it's so awful there.
Well, I mean, on Xbox Live, they're gonna have to sift through a lot of homophobic and racial slurs to get to any real data.
Right.
Trolling noobs.
Yeah, and all of that, all of the Chuck Norris jokes that are still happening in World of Warcraft are they're thinly veiled, like codes for, like, target coordinates and stuff like that. I mean, I think this is solidly in the not a thing category of kind of baseless, warrantless surveillance.
Yeah. I pay good money to go listen to people who shout obscenities at me, and I don't need the government nannying me.
Or worse,
I go troll some noobs.
They're probably trolling us too, to some degree.
Maybe they're all the shitty players. It's a bunch of analysts in wherever the NSA is.
That's why they're so they're so angry.
Their secret Call of Duty bunker.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I think listening to that, I mean, I don't know how I listen to it when I play.
And that's your tax dollars at work.
Yeah.
That's insane. That is insanity.
You're paying double for it, essentially, right? Because you have to pay for Xbox Live.
I want credits, Microsoft. Yeah, I don't need the NSA watching me murder prostitutes in Grand Theft Auto 5. Not that I do that in the game, but I know people do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, in the government is doing well news, There's an update on the patent troll case, and we talked about this briefly. There was a patent troll who was claiming a bunch of things. I mean, patent trolling, for better or for worse, but mostly worse, is a thing where people will assert a patent in order to, you know, essentially extort someone, usually like the inventor of it, about out money to settle, essentially. And so someone was claiming that he, not that he invented it, but he owned the patent to podcasts. And so it was, you know, extorting, I think it was Corolla's podcast, you know, saying that, hey, I invented or I have the thing that says that I own the invention rights of podcasting, so you have to pay me a royalty. And that's ridiculous. And apparently 325 to 91, the House of Representatives said that that's ridiculous. So, I mean, this was a general patent troll killing law that's being pushed around. Or I guess it's technically still a bill, right?
Right.
It has to go to...
It's just a bill.
It has to go to the Senate, and then it gets signed. So, yeah. So hopefully cooler minds will prevail in the Senate, and we'll pull that together.
I just realized the U.S. government enacting laws follows the measure twice, cut once rule. If you think of the president as the knife, the two parts of the legislature are the measurements.
Excellent. And then is the judiciary branch the is that the sandpaper?
No, that's the person standing behind you watching you do the work and saying, no, that's wrong. You did that wrong. That's crooked.
That's jerk.
Too short.
No, they're good. They're good. They're good. What am I saying? It's a good thing.
I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying... Does that look straight to you? Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, but they take, you know, 45 pages to tell you that it's fine.
Right.
And then three of them write 60 pages to tell you that, you know, it could use a little work. I like this analogy. This is going to stick. You heard it here first.
Yes. I'm pretty sure I just made it up.
Well, I think it's a good idea. I mean, the patent troll thing is just ridiculous. I mean, the main thing that's broken about it is that you can essentially buy rights to something with no expectation of, like, executing on that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're buying them essentially so you can sue other people, and that just seems broken.
That is definitely not a thing. I think we can strongly say the official position of the Not a Thing podcast: no patent trolls. Patents good, trolls bad.
Yeah. In kind of bigger picture podcasting news, podcasting should still be a thing. We like it. We shouldn't be legally obligated to fork over money for anything regarding the actual act of podcasting.
Yeah. We didn't, nobody invented, oh, I mean, somebody invented talking, but there's no patent for talking.
I guess that one got grandfathered in. Well, not kind of talking, but remembering. There's an article recently about something that I just saw this last weekend. I was at Not So Silent Night in Oakland. I went to Night One, which was let's see if I can remember everybody. It was Capital Cities, Arctic Monkeys, Queens of the Stone Age, Vampire Weekend, and Kings of Leon.
Wow, that is quite the lineup.
It was a good set. I think I enjoyed Queens of the Stone Age most, but only because they were also the loudest. In between, in between Arctic Monkeys and Queens of the Stone Age was AFI.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
They're still a thing?
I know, right? They were good. They were good.
Were they unbelievable? I guess it was unbelievable that they're still playing music.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, it was a good stretch. They played all their hits and it was fine.
That sounds like a strong endorsement. They played all their hits. It was fine.
Well, I think it was interesting that they were kind of in the middle of the bill. And same with Queens of the Stone Age. I mean, I feel like they were a bigger headliner, or would have been. I don't know. I mean, Kings of Leon were okay. I don't follow them as well as Queens of the Stone Age, so
it seems like Kings of Leon are hotter now, which is probably why they headlined.
Yeah, I guess. Well, anyway, the thing that I saw a lot of while I was there, I mean, I was sitting in the rows of seats kind of near where the big projection screen is. I didn't get floor seats this year, but I mean, we're pretty close. We're kind of off angle, but we're really close to the stage, and it was a great show. I mean, we could see everything, but the big projection screen is to my left, and so I would look occasionally and I would get a different angle, and that was nice. But what I would see around me were just tons of people filming or recording. No one uses film anymore, sorry. But they're recording with their phones and taking pictures of the screen, which I feel is really broken. I mean, yeah, it's an HD screen, but I just feel like if you're going to take a picture of something, take a picture of what you can see. I don't know. And apparently, I just don't understand the whole phenomenon of taking pictures at concerts. I mean, I will take maybe one or two. I'm never so close that it makes sense to take pictures. I mean, maybe I'll take a picture of myself to show I was there, but never when a band is playing. It's
like, I think the only time I've ever gotten a good picture or good video at a concert was when I saw George Clinton, because I was like 3 feet away from him. Other than that, every time I go and look at it later, it's like, why did I even bother?
Right. And I feel like, I mean, no matter how nice your camera is, unless you are like 3 feet away, you're not going to want to watch that video again. And I mean, you might be able to look at a picture and go, oh yeah, that was kind of cool. But watching the video is just going to be just disappointing. It's not going to, you know, invoke any memories of what was there. And that was actually scientifically proven, at least to some degree, by a study that came out this week, that when you take pictures specifically, you're not forming the same kind of connection to whatever you're watching. So when you're asked to recall it later, just the act of taking the picture, I guess the mental connections that it takes to you know, get the camera out and set everything up and take the picture makes it become like a dismissive action. So it doesn't, you know, lock into your brain so tightly. Like if someone showed you a picture that was taken of the concert you were at, you might be able to, or you would be able to remember, because, you know, the act of taking in that concert, you know, with your own eyes,
right,
and ears, forms a better kind of Link mentally, and then the photo helps warm that kind of memory up. But if all you're doing is taking a photo, you're never putting that memory down in the first place. So taking those photos is actually hindering your ability to remember stuff.
I plus, need that ability.
Yeah, plus for people like me, it just blocks our ability to see the show because I'm short. And when you hold your camera over your head for, you know, the entire length of the song, A, you're not going to remember it, and B, all I'm going to remember is that I hate you. At least I have seen less, like, I didn't see anybody that was, I almost said filming again. I didn't see anyone recording with their iPads.
Oh, that is I've seen that. I don't think you were there when we were, I was at an A's game, and there was a travel group from Japan, and they had the entire section in front of us. Like, there was probably 100 people. They're all students, and they all had the same color iPad in these cases, and they were holding them up innings at a time, recording the game.
Wow.
They'd all put them up. You see all these screens come up, and then they'd all go down.
Oh, that's weird.
It was bizarre.
That would almost be, like, cool from a, like, you could take all of that footage and kind of merge it. That could be kind of a neat thing, because you would get slightly different angles on things. I mean, it wouldn't be enough to create, like, a 3D model or anything like that, but I could see that as being kind of interesting. Like, there was an app that Microsoft made, and I don't think it took off, mostly because Microsoft made it and their mobile phone platform is not as well adopted, but it was something called, I think it was called Photosphere or something like that, and it was a crowdsourced kind of 3D image generator. And what it would do is it would take people's photos of, like, famous places, and then you would, like, if you took a bunch of pictures at, say, the Statue of Liberty, for example, from all of the different angles that you took it, and you uploaded them to their service, all of the other people that did that kind of as well, it would, based on some things about, it knows about, like, angles and lenses and depth of field, it would kind of put all of those together, and it would make a crowdsourced 3D model of the Statue of Liberty.
Huh, that'll save you on having to buy the little knickknacks at the gift shop. You just need your 3D printer and this program.
Yeah, exactly. I think it sounded cool in parts of it, but I don't think it would actually kind of work. I mean, if Apple did it, because then Apple, I feel like, has more market share. But I think at the same time, it kind of has that, like, unintended consequences thing where all of your photos can be used in a way that you probably didn't intend.
Right.
I mean, I think Apple is already probably catching flack for their what is it called, their photo, the iCloud, it's like what is that one called, there is a an automatic photo backup thing that Apple does, and so essentially all the pictures you take, if you have it paired with another device like an iPad that you that's connected to the same account, when you take a picture on your phone, it shows up in that tablet, which is kind of interesting, as long as you want whoever is holding that tablet to see all the pictures that you take with your phone.
That could be awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely it could. I think it also links to, like, your Apple TV, if you wanted it to.
That could be even more awkward.
Right. Huge TV, Maybe your parents know how to use it. Maybe they don't.
It's an Apple TV. They probably don't.
Photo Stream. That's what it's called. Yeah, I think I had it on very briefly and then noticed that I didn't want it on almost immediately.
Photo Stream sounds like you're pissing away your photos.
Well, you know, you're definitely pissing away your memory.
Right? Yes, definitely pissing away your memory. Science said so. Thanks, science.
Yeah, I've never been one to want to take pictures at a concert, I guess. I mean, or if I did, I really wanted like a much better camera. I think I was actually turned away at a concert once because I was out that day and I had my SLR and I wasn't intending to take pictures at the show with it. Although I guess I could have, but they told me that I had to go return it to my car.
Huh.
Which is kind of a bummer.
Well, there's a new Lumia phone that has a 41 megapixel camera.
Right.
That's pretty good.
I think it's a Nokia.
Yeah, Nokia Lumia.
It runs Windows Phone.
Yeah, that's why I didn't get it. I really wanted to get it until I saw it was a Windows Phone.
It's actually a pretty good setup. It's a lot of the things that I like about smartphones, but it exists in a world where, like, Android and iOS never existed.
I mean, like it makes almost,
yeah, it makes almost no like connections out to either of those kinds of systems or whatever. It's completely its own kind of user interface, and the actions, you know, don't match, which I think is interesting in that it could be developed in that way. But the real problem is, because it is so different, it requires essentially an extra level of programming to bring apps over to them. And unless, you know, it's a chicken egg kind of problem, you know, the market share is not there, so the apps aren't there, but because the apps aren't there, the market share is not there. So really cool tech, kind of an unfortunate kind of setup for it. Kind of like, what was it? The HP touchpad. Did you ever see that?
I don't think so.
That was the one that ran on, I think it was called WebOS. It was Palm's kind of thing, and then HP bought them. And they had a really nice kind of interface about how you'd move stuff in panels and running apps. And a lot of the stuff that is in iOS 7, like the way you see apps that are running, you kind of double tap and then they come up and you see little panels. That's all heavily borrowed from that set of kind of things.
Apple doesn't borrow things from other companies. That's ridiculous.
Oh, what am I saying? What am I saying?
I mean, I'm fine with the NSA breathing down our necks. I don't want Apple coming after us. They're really scary.
Yeah, we really do like our podcast in iTunes.
Yes.
It is actually a very, very easy podcast distribution system. I think they mostly have locked that one up. I actually don't know how I would get podcasts if I didn't have kind of that iTunes thing. I guess I would just go to the website and then download it directly.
Which would be a hassle.
Yeah.
If you aren't streaming it on your computer.
Right.
Which I think is how this podcast is listened to on occasion.
Hi, listeners.
We know you exist.
This next story is for you.
It's all for you.
Well, the next story is actually also somewhat concert related. There was a graphic artist, or I'm not sure exactly what the kind of profession of this person, but they were so strongly moved by an idea that they went ahead and redesigned it. And so specifically, it was a guy that was a fairly avid concert goer, and he'd even, you know, ushered and volunteered at shows. And so he has a lot of experience with tickets and reading tickets and dealing with them. And anyone that's gotten a ticket printed from Ticketmaster knows that they pretty much have looked the same since those tickets came out. They're apparently thermally printed, so there's no ink involved. So you essentially run it through a thing, and the heat makes the black appear. And it means that because it's not ink, it can get wet and it doesn't run, all that kind of stuff. And it's got this weird arcane set of numbers, and your seat is listed in like two different places, and it's very hard to read.
And they're too big for your wallet.
Yeah. Yeah, without folding them or ruining them otherwise, they're kind of unusually long, but they're like longer than a like dollar bill, but shorter than a dollar bill, so they don't quite fit in a wallet where like money would fit. There are all sorts of problems, and so this guy went and took it upon himself to redesign one and put essentially stripped out all the stuff that you don't need, and then had some affordances for stuff that, you know, would work. Like, it would still be a thing that could be thermally printed. I mean, he makes the concession that there's still a place for that versus, you know, like print at home tickets, which are on just regular paper. And then, you know, maybe that barcode is really hard to read or whatever, because it's printed with like your crappy inkjet or my crappy inkjet.
Right.
And they address the problems of like size. Like I for the longest time, and it wasn't at Ticketmaster, but it was dealing with boarding passes. When you would print them out, you know, they would be on 8.5 by 11 paper. And then at the airport, all of the scanners want that weird shape, like kind of rectangular, kind of with that weird bulge on it kind of paper, in order to, you know, hold it under the barcode scanner. It used to be they would be automated and you would actually push them through. And then now they're like grocery store scanners where you hold them under because they had that. And then now mobile boarding passes require you to like hold your phone in a weird way to get to them. And I think this article kind of hints at the there's it's in flux right now. There's like a lot of ways to get tickets in, and you know, one of the things that I like about it is that they're not saying, you know, we'll just do it digitally. Everyone's gonna have phones nowadays, and we'll just make it so it works on a phone. And I disagree with that. I think paper tickets are still kind of
a
cool
thing
and important. Yeah, a thing, as it were. I mean, physical media kind of tendencies aside, I mean, I definitely tend towards physical media if I can help it. But I do notice that there are limitations in stuff on phones, right? Phones run out of batteries. You know, if your concert is really late, maybe you don't have any power. If you don't have any power in your phone, you don't want to get locked out of your concert because you don't have the, you know, your mobile ticket, essentially.
Or if you get intoxicated before a concert and drop your phone. You don't want to lose that.
Yeah. It's a very, very valid kind of outcome, I think.
But I like the size that he chose for his redesign, because it's about the same size as an iPhone screen. So that would make it even easier on ticket takers and ushers. So they're all looking at the same thing.
Yeah. the same size, like form factor, right? Yeah, that is really annoying. Like, I remember getting back to the boarding pass thing. At one point, I forget the carrier. I don't think it was Southwest. No, it wasn't, because Southwest has always been the cattle call for seats. Might have been US Air or something. Anyway, they actually, when you had printed out at home, it had fold marks on it because they wanted you to fold it so it would fit in the same kind of reader space, so the ticket taker could kind of look at it and, you know, quickly and orient by, oh, okay, this right corner, so this is where the seat is, and that kind of thing. And you know, that kind of spatial awareness and spatial memory is important, especially for trying to read some of these tickets. I mean, anyone that's tried to tell where their seat is kind of in the dark, because someone is sitting in their seat who has snuck down from a different row, you don't want to be pointing at it for like half an hour trying to find, you know, oh no, this is row C and I'm in C9. What seat are we in? You know, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, it was a very, very sparse ticket. I mean, it was like you said, about the size of like a credit card was, I think, the way they described it, because also then it would fit in a wallet very easily. Mm-hmm. But it had essentially just the important parts, the number, the seat, and the section kind of in one row, really big. And then it had an anti counterfeiting thing, you know, which, fine, you got to put it on there, at least, you know, do it in a way that I think is visible enough, but, you know, doesn't take up like this weird 3/4 of the ticket. And then it has, you know, more detailed information kind of in smaller print, but, you know, still pretty readable and big. And then on the back, it has all of the crazy stuff about, you know, like thrown bats and
we are Ticketmaster. We have a specific set of skills. We will find you, and we will destroy you if you violate these terms.
Right. Yeah, and that's fine. Put it on the back. Everything, you know, everything's good. We can deal with it. I mean, I think it's really cool. It's an interesting kind of article from a design principles kind of perspective. And it looks like, I don't know if the same person or if it's an agency did one regarding boarding passes, airline boarding passes, but that one is also linked in the article, and we'll link it in the show notes per usual.
I'll be lamenting the fact that this hasn't been changed on Sunday when I start to buy all my tickets for San Francisco Sketchfest, because it just released the lineup today. They're announcing the schedule Friday, and everything goes on sale Sunday.
Oh.
It's a magical time of the year.
Take all my money.
Seriously. My bank account is like, all right, that's going to be gone.
Yeah, we were looking at the list kind of today, because like you mentioned, it was the list is released today, although it doesn't say any of the times or anything like that.
Yeah, there's going to be conflicts for sure.
Yeah, because I was looking at it, and I'm like, I want to go to this one and this one and this one. How do I start planning it? Oh, I can't. No.
My list got up to 12 different shows that I wanted to see. And I figured that I was like, all right, at $20 to $30 a show, I'm going to be broke before I start paying for parking. Gas in San Francisco. So I'm going to have to pare that list down. But there's 12 contenders currently.
Nice.
Some of them I have to go to. That's non-negotiable.
Cool. Yeah, the ticket system for that. I think they do use Ticketmaster. You're probably right.
I think it also depends on the venue with that particular festival. Because it's so many different venues. I'm not sure. We'll find out and report back next week.
Right.
And we can announce what shows we're going to be going to
Yeah, so you
to
can.
try and organize some sort of podcast meetup.
Yeah, we unfortunately didn't get into Sketchfest in the podcast category this year. We're really, you know, we want to let like the Nerdist kind of have their day.
Well, we were invited to the LA Podcast Festival.
That's right.
Graham Elwood was like, "Yeah, you should come. Come interview people." But other things took precedence.
And the fact that we have no kind of mobile equipment.
That too. We could have done it on iPhones.
Right. Exactly. You know, we'll keep it on the radar for 2014. Well, definitely on the radar for 2014 for me is the show Almost Human.
Yes.
I mean, it's been going, I want to say they're 5 episodes in on Fox.
Yeah, I believe the 5th episode just aired this week.
Yeah, and I've only seen 2 of them, but I'm way into it.
I'm 3.5 in. I actually had to stop one so we could record.
Well, excellent.
It was very exciting. I'm not
spoiler
rushing.
Spoiler alert, it's good.
Yeah. Spoiler, if you get one of the creators of Fringe and Carl Urban with the soundtrack done by Crystal Method, you're going to have a good show. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. You pointed out that it was the soundtrack by Crystal Method. And I think it was in the second show. There's a raid on a building, and they have everyone kind of running through the building. You know, the lasers on their rifles, kind of lighting up the whole place. And I was thinking about the music during the sequence, and it's like, wow, it's kind of loud. I mean, I guess they're raiding a club, so it can be have that kind of driving soundtrack kind of thing. And I realized, oh no, it does. That was probably Crystal Method. Now that you point that out,
yeah. No, I really like the music and the visual design of the show, in addition to the acting and the story and pacing and humor.
Yeah, I think
it's a lot
really
of right notes.
I mean, it is a, you know, at heart, a buddy cop show procedural. And there's some things that are definitely from other shows, right? But I think some of the execution in it is really nice. Like, they have Dorian, the android. He will access the, you know, the crime scene notes that someone else has already taken. And that's why he knows it, you know, immediately upon getting on the scene, and then rattles off the here's what happened, right?
Yeah.
Instead of having the tech that's there, it's like, what do we got? And then they talk about, you
know. It streamlines the exposition. I just feel like the pace is good. It's not a slow, it doesn't drag.
Right. Right. I mean, I think the hints at kind of whatever the big picture backstory is, I almost don't care.
Right.
It's like, just do the normal cop show stuff, because you're doing it well. I mean, it's really nice. And even the humor is good without going to that kind of like dopey music cue humor that you
right.
have.
It's throwaway lines.
Yeah.
Like there's a, in the third episode, the main character played by Carl Urban is having a conversation with his captain, and she's like ordering him to leave this place. So he's trying to pretend that the signal's breaking up, and he just hangs up on her. And he says, "Boring conversation, anyways." He quotes Han Solo. Right. Like, what?
Very nice.
No, it's good. It's nice to see a science fiction show that starts strong and just seems to increase the pace. Because even with some of the better science fiction shows, it takes like a season or a half a season or sometimes 2 seasons to get to get going.
Especially on Fox.
Yes. I mean, I ended up really liking Dollhouse, but the first few episodes of that series were terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and speaking of like kind of slow moving sci-fi, and then in that kind of procedural thought, have we talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ever?
I don't know that we have, but I've
we did on the show.
I've continued watching, and it's growing on me. It does make the turn eventually. It takes like 6 episodes.
Wow. Okay, I gave up at 5.
No, you just gotta wait one more. It starts to pick up.
Oh, I might. I still have them DVR'd, I think, so I might go back. But I mean, I could not help but compare it to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Just because it's such a, it's, I mean, they're both very procedural. Like this is there's this kind of mystery of the week that we have to unravel, and then we're going to give someone, one of the characters, kind of a character growth moment partway through the show and everything. And I see that in Almost Human, but I like the characters in Almost Human, whereas I feel like there's still there, or at least at episode 5 anyway, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there were too many to care about, and I didn't really like maybe 2/3 of them.
No, they make them more likable, and they actually start to develop the characters into people that you care about eventually. But Almost Human, right off the bat, is like, yes, I'm on board. Pilot episode, go.
Yeah.
Make more of this.
Yeah, so I hope that sticks around. I mean, my major kind of issue with it is, you know, sci-fi on Fox is, you know, it has a troubled relationship with sci-fi.
Well, I have some faith because it's created by one of the runners of Fringe.
Right.
Lasted longer than it ever should have by a number standpoint. Like, no, I love the show. It's one of my favorite shows. I think it was executed well. It actually pays off with the finale. But that show should have been canceled from a rating standpoint years before it was actually ended. It lasted 5 seasons.
Yeah, I haven't looked at numbers for Almost Human, although supposedly the first couple episodes did well. I think that may have had to do with, I think it was, it premiered on a Sunday. And
yeah.
But their normal time slot is Monday. And so I don't know if it was a like Monday Night Football kind of thing or what.
Well, I'm doing my part. I'm actually watching it on Hulu. I'm not illegally downloading it. I want it to continue.
I'm actually watching it like live on Mondays.
Wow.
If I were a Nielsen family, I would, you know.
You would count.
Yeah, I would count for like, what, 6 million people or something like that?
So, not a thing, listeners. Check out Almost Human. Watch it by legal means, if possible, which is totally possible. It's worth it.
Yeah. And, okay, maybe I'll go back and watch episode 6 and on from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
If you're not doing that, you should at least pick up season 2 of Arrow.
Cool. Excellent. Well, this has been another lovely show. It's about 45-ish minutes in. It's pretty good, right?
I think we've hit our mark.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk next week. I will most likely have seen The Hobbit 2 by that point.
Desolation of Smaug. So... Desolation of Smaug.
Smaug.
Some crazy ass Kiwi coming up with some weird pronunciation. I love New Zealand, but come on, guys. It's smog.
Well, you know, they have to run it through like the British actor filter first.
Right.
So, you know, it's a Kiwi production, but it's a Brit cast, and then we'll make it work eventually. Cool. Well, the power is still out, so I'm still on. So I'm going to
save this podcast before we lose it.
Stop this podcast and get it up on the internet as soon as possible.
Until next time, Alan.
See you later.